No, yeah.
He shuts down.
How he wouldn't let me redo it.
So, yeah, we're on episode 2 of the DeQuisto Series podcast. Cody's upset because the first episode we did was kind of just like seeing what we're going to do, and Cody forgot the camera was there and was staring off into blank space, and you can't get your first episode back,
man. I want to redo that intro so bad because it was – I think I was just
– Well, this is where you make up for it, you know? You know, if you're going to be a podcaster now, you gotta learn how to conversate, you know?
That's a weird term, man, a podcaster. I'm going to try my best.
We're going to work on you, man.
Yeah, yeah.
What's up, boys?
Wow. Really? Okay.
This is where we're going. Yeah, we're starting this way.
Ready to rock, man.
It's better than hitting a button and then having everything shut down and being like, all right, now we're going.
Yep.
That's why you have to start it sometimes.
Now that we're 2.5 hours into this.
Yeah, we challenged just with the smart TV to get that logo on the background here. You see us.
But it looks good.
It looks all right, yeah. It's definitely good enough.
Looks okay. A few technical difficulties.
It's good enough.
Off the bat, but.
So, yeah, man, episode 2. We're
episode
into
two.
It now. We're
episode
officially
two.
Got the wheels turning. We're rocking. Andre's a podcaster now, officially.
Wow.
Do you ever think? Did
Never
you ever
thought.
Think it's
I'm
crazy?
Still wondering what the hell I'm doing up here, but
yeah, I know.
Let's get into it.
Let's sink this.
Let's
sink this
some
shit
questions
right out the gate.
And,
yeah, seeing that we
yes.
had to explain the concept of podcasting to you not too long ago,
it's like radio, but on the internet.
No. How did you always say you said whenever old people ask me about a podcast, what did you? How do
I
you
just say it's
it?
Like internet radio.
Oh, internet radio.
And I said it's on the interwebs. Anybody can access it. It's free. You know, that's how it works. This podcast, so it was once we launched the teaser to the show, I was getting bombarded with messages on the Custom Gear page, on the Working Class page, on my personal page, on please tell me you're going to cover Andre's story. And I think more people are just curious on, like, before Lone Wolf, before all of it, like how you got into hunting in general. And I think people are just curious because they want a guy that kills big bucks consistently and has the knowledge that you have. They want to know, like, kind of how you came up into it. Like, how did you start into that whole game? So I figure we'll just dissect that. And
do you want to go way back?
I think we should.
Well, okay. I think, too, a lot of people know that you're not, like, from the country. You know, you kind of came from a city kid. So it definitely is a little unorthodox. Like,
yeah.
It's not... Or I guess not the typical start.
It's, yeah,
I
it's
guess
not
you'd
like
say.
The Americana deer hunting
exactly.
story people are used to.
Yeah.
So I did grow up in Milwaukee, and in
like
Milwaukee,
in the city of Milwaukee.
Yes.
Okay.
But just a few miles away was the Milwaukee River.
Okay.
And when you got down on the bottoms, you could have thought you were up north. So I gravitated toward that. I was one of those kids always catching frogs, snakes.
Right.
Chasing ducks around with a club in the park and stuff, things of that nature.
So you're just on your own, though? Like, you didn't
yeah,
have someone,
just,
like, got... You just had a natural interest.
Yeah, it wasn't really much for the concrete jungle, so...
Right.
Started there. Then we moved out to the suburbs, where I met a friend who had some older brothers who hunted, because I didn't come from a hunting background at all. None of our family members
yeah.
really hunted. I did have one uncle that fished, and I did go up, you know, during the summer with him.
Mm-hmm.
But basically... got pulled under the wings of a bunch of older guys.
Mm-hmm.
And as they got older, they ended up going to Vietnam and stuff. And when they came back, they'd always come back. And one of the guys that I hung around with was a younger brother.
Mm-hmm.
They'd take us along with them, and we'd go clubbing.
Okay.
And, yeah. So, I mean, I've watched guys literally catch animals, pheasants. I witnessed one of them take a pheasant right out of midair with his bare hands. pretty impressive.
So it's kind of like starting out on really like a mobility, like stealth factor right out of the gate before a bow and arrow or deer or even yeah. in like the thought. I mean, maybe that might be something to do with like all this.
It was insane. And then, yeah. So here's a guy taking pheasants out of the air. Another guy's in his fatigues in a dry river bottom. And I'm watching him, and a rabbit is just meandering down the bottom toward him. And he's just standing still.
Mm-hmm.
This rabbit goes between his legs, and he just drops on it and pounces it. This guy's got a pheasant. He's got a rabbit. I'm standing around like, holy shit, this is some intense stuff.
Just caught a rabbit.
So from there, we started clubbing, and then we got into trapping heavy. So I think that trapping background probably made you more attuned to scents, reading
right.
sign and things of that nature.
Right.
And I was just flipped on trapping head over heels. That's all I like to do. After football, weekends, trapping. And then, I don't know, for some reason, I went out and I hunted with a bow. And once I started bow hunting, I mean, I hung up the traps and never trapped again.
How did you get your hands on a bow?
Guys, Kmart, the 20-pound fiberglass recurve was our first bow.
Oh, really?
Literally hunting with field tips. And I always tell this story because it's funny. My first bow kill was a rabbit, and I ran out of arrows, and I beat it to death in the deep snow. Literally ran it down, and so it was a bow kill.
You beat it with the bow?
But not the arrow. I didn't hit it with one arrow. So it seemed like I had that M.O. from start. It's always a struggle to do it, you know? So,
right.
And then from there, we started hunting pheasants and small game.
And this is all right around Milwaukee?
Yes, suburban Milwaukee. We get on the tracks and just follow them for a couple hours out of the city, and then you get into your suburbs, and it was like paradise for us kids. You know, we'd have a pack, take some lunch, and just go on these excursions and stuff. And some of the spots that we hunted, you talk about Boone and Crockett whitetail. We used to hunt Boone and Crockett rabbits in the local junkyards. Man, they were huge, you know. So
we'd hide them in like an old El Camino or something, and just
all through there, and then trap them coming in and out of the fences around there. But as a young kid and liking the outdoors, it was an experience, you know.
So clubbing, you got a bow, bludgeoned a rabbit with the actual bow.
Yeah.
And then how long before after that, like when deer hunting came into the picture?
Realistically, I didn't start deer hunting until after I was out of high school. So I trapped heavy.
Oh, really?
Yep. And then for some reason on my own, I decided to try whitetail hunting with a bow. And I did have a little experience. I got dragged up for a gun hunt before that a little bit, just turned me off. And I always liked that.
Well, I mean, if you go from clubbing
to a gun rifle,
it's almost like cheating. I don't want to say that, but it would almost feel that way.
So then you talk about this mobile aspect. So I'm out there with a gun, and all the guys are out there sitting tight, and I'm this guy looking around, walking around. I probably was the direct cause of a lot of deer getting killed. I was pushing deer to everybody, or shooting them. But I was reading sign and going looking at what was going on around there. And then, like I said, I just decided to try this with a bow. And, man, once I did that, I got bit by the bug heavy.
I got a little feedback going on. Yeah, I mean, I can see that, especially coming from, like, that background, that super stealth-type background, and then to just pick up a gun and be like, 100 yards would seem it would seem a little weird, I would think, if everyone else started out that way.
And I wasn't comfortable with guns at all.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you think that's just being from inner Milwaukee? Or?
Well, in Milwaukee, one of our classmate literally got his brother cleaning a 30-06 rifle, decided to play Army in their front room, and one brother shot another brother square in the chest. And ever since that, it was like, just kind of turned me off. So even trying that and Dell went a little, I just wasn't comfortable with him.
Yeah,
so,
I understood there for sure. And that's like, Cody, have you ever killed a deer with a gun? Have you ever even?
No, I've never. I mean, I've shot guns, and there's been guns in the household and shotguns or whatnot. And as a kid, like, plinked around for rabbits and BB guns and 22s, but never deer hunted with a gun. But it was just something he always bow hunted, so it was like,
that's the way you do it.
Yeah, and I never even my brother, when he came up and started hunting, and he's like, well, I want to hunt with a gun. And that never occurred to me. I was like, oh, well, why do you want to hunt with a gun? Like,
right.
We hunt with
bows.
You
know what he said? You're going to let him hunt this property with a gun?
Oh, yeah.
are you serious?
Well, that's the thing. It's like, I never had the option. It was like, well, here's a bow. Not like, well, hey, son, you want to use a shotgun this year? Like,
yeah.
But my brother, hey, you want to use a muzzleloader? You want to?
So guns.
Yeah. It's a little.
Or, you know, it never, you know. I guess, because I started gun hunting. I gun hunted for a few years, and it took me, I never killed a deer for three, just shotgun season, just weekends when I was a kid. But bow hunting, like my second day out, I killed a deer. So I'm like, oh, I was meant to be a bow hunter. You know, it's one of those things. I'm thankful that I had to struggle and then got my deer with a bow, you know, but it's,
I was a more loner too. So gun season normally was, you know, camaraderie, the families,
especially in Wisconsin. Hunting.
Yeah. You get big packs of guys that go up, and I just, something just turned me off about that. So,
And even coming up too, anybody that I knew that I was associated with, or any friends or people that I knew in just life in general that hunted, we're all, nobody bow hunted. And they were like, oh, well, so, like, do you go up north? Like, you know, or gun season's coming up. And I'm like, oh, well, I got a week off, you know, because gun season's coming up. Like,
yeah.
I only hunt with the bow. And it's just this weird, I think there is a little bit of a divide there.
Yeah, for sure.
With your typical deer camp mentality and then the way that, an aggressive bow hunter would kind of approach the season.
Yeah, for sure. And two, I noticed a lot of guys, and I was guilty of this for sure, is gun season seemed like the safety net to my failed bow season.
I can tell you about all that.
You know what I mean, though? But as I became a better bow hunter, that fell out. And I haven't killed a deer with a gun in about 10 years now. And I don't even go out with a gun anymore. Now in Illinois, you can bow hunt during firearm season.
That was nice when they changed the law. And I want to put on a record, I have nothing against guys that want to hunt with a gun or whatever weapon they want to pick.
Yeah,
it's all personal
absolutely.
Preference. It's
for sure.
But like you said, I've seen a lot of my friends, they chase around deer all year with the bow, and then they would get frustrated and it was payback time when the muzzleloader season came out.
Reach out and touch them then, you know.
Where I was trying to keep those alive through the gun season so I could chase them around again late season with the bow.
Right, So you got the bow and then started working your way. I guess that interest peaked big time there, obviously, you know.
Hunting on the ground with a recurve.
That's hardcore. So how did that go? Like, how long did you do that?
I was like an idiot running around out there, chasing, literally physically chasing after deer, rifle and arrows. I had a ball. Actually, my wife, which was my girlfriend at the time, I'd get set up in the woods, and I'd have her go out in the field where deers were feeding, and she'd push a whole field through to me and do a drive, and they'd come flying by. And
that's a woman right there.
Yeah. So, she'd be there trapping, too, and skinning rats and stuff with me. But it was a lot of fun. And then I started getting a little more serious in it. They really didn't antler size, nothing, you know, anything you just put down a bowl.
So wait, real quick, when would you say this was? Let's get a time frame
80,
here.
Let's see. So it would have been graduated in 80, maybe 82 or so.
And I mean, to recap, so you're a kid, you're intrigued by the outdoors and just, you know, the ability to hunt in general and like the tactics and stuff that go along with it. But trapping was a big part of your life that we kind of skipped over. But you get this bow in your hands, and it's the early 80s, so there's not a lot of people. I mean,
there wasn't. I mean, when was the first mainstream compound out? The 70s, late 70s, mid 70s?
I was with the recurves. I hunted recurves from a little kid all the way on up through high school.
Okay.
When I trapped, I had a recurve with me. We get a skunk.
Oh, okay.
We get a skunk and a trap. I mean, I pull that recurve out and with his wiki, and I just
whap him.
Put one right through the heart, and it wouldn't even spray. You know, so we were always well rehearsed with recurves hunting.
Right. Okay. That's awesome.
Later on in the game.
Right. So this is, you're like 18, 19-ish.
Yeah.
When you started deer hunting with a recurve.
No. I would have been later than that, like after high school. So we always hunted with recurves, but then I tried that gun for a couple times with my wife's family members.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started taking off into that Delvin with the bow. So somewhere in that 81.
Honestly, it's a little later than I thought. Yeah. And I think viewers and listeners might have thought that you started when you were 12 after deer type of thing, which is, I think, is really cool and encouraging for a lot of guys that are starting bow hunting in their 20s.
Because
I started, I killed my first buck with a bow and I was 15.
Yeah, I learned it all on my own. Just went out and made mistakes and a lot of people probably don't know. I like to scout and go look at new areas better than I do actually to sit and hunt. I mean, that part of the game, the puzzle, putting it together, that's a big thrill for me. So.
Right, and it adds up to, I mean, really, it's a recipe to add up to more success or more frequent success.
Yeah, and knowing what's going on. Yeah.
And these older guys always deer hunted, so when I come over to their house and they'd have deer hanging every gun season, and you know, they ate venison, and I just never. We were trapping, we seen some bucks in suburban areas that if I seen them now, I'd probably drop my jaw on it. It was like, oh, a deer.
Oh,
we go back to trapping, you know? So it was like, it was weird, you know?
Think about it then.
So you picked up a bow, and you were just trying to kill animals. Like, it wasn't, racks weren't thought of.
Having fun, you know? Yep.
So did when you started to turn the tide and start to look at racks and acknowledge them, is that when you started to notice the use for a tree stand? Like, did those correlate, or was that a whole different time?
That evolution went from ground hunting to getting up on elevated positions, just in a tree or on like hillsides. And then, again, older guy. I always hung with the older crowd. somebody said something about, well, they got, there's these tree stands out there, and they were Baker tree stands at the time, you know, that you could just go get in there and get up a tree and set up your spot. So
yeah,
one guy had one, and we were put on a telephone pole, and we were up about 5 feet on there, and the thing like, just felt like it was ready to just bust through. I said, no, absolutely not. So I went and took that concept, and I made my own stand that was sturdy and solid where I could get up in a tree. And so, it was the first
climb. But how much time from chasing deer around crazy on the ground to this point?
Not a lot of time at all, probably just a year or two.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I was curious as if the correlation and the want or obsession with, okay, a trophy now came with the, okay, how am I going to get this done? Oh, it didn't, not at all.
No,
so it was just about getting up in a tree to just hunt in general at first.
Yeah. Okay. We were just, dude, you've seen some of the deer we shot, four corns, and at first,
just to get it done.
Shooting a doe was like a feat to do it with these recurves, you know.
Yeah, of course, still is.
And I would have to say, the first, so we're doing that. Me and my brother hunted heavy together. He started out the business with me, Nick. And we would go up north and hunt with our bulls and our stands. And the first, we both scouted a spot out.
Mm-hmm.
He seen it was red hot sign. I seen it was red hot sign. And we like flipped for a spot.
Mm-hmm.
And I shot my first Pope and Young. It was 125
really?
And an eighth.
Oh, you made
it. Eight-pointer, right?
Right there.
And I don't know what about that did it. But then it got scored. And I'm a goals-oriented type guy. And in my mind, it set the stage for something to go after.
Okay.
So that was the inclination of the trophy hunting. Now, the next year's got to be bigger than this one.
Of course. Yeah.
And I don't know if we mentioned this before, but I don't know if people realize that from 125 and an eighth, 20-some Pope and Youngs all the way up to Boone and Crockett, I've never shot a smaller deer the previous year and never went bounced back and forth. It just steadily went up. 132, 138, 142. I mean, I'd be hunting around, I'd be passing up a 150-inch buck, I remember, three times just to shoot one that was 155.
No shit.
So it was a goal-oriented thing for me.
And that's cool. I think there's a lot of people, I don't know if I could do that. Like, you know, if I shot a buck that was 160, I'm not passing a 155 the following year.
Right.
But it all depends.
But if you want one bigger and you only got one tag, it's either you make your choice.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. But that's cool, though. That's part of the interest in it is, like, your success and consistency.
All
so,
right.
I mean, we had some questions here from social media, and there's a lot of people wanting to know, like, your story before the tree stands, like that build up to how you got into that. So I appreciate everyone submitting these questions. So a lot of this stuff, like you basically started breaking it down and putting like the sign, like at first, how long did it take you to like learn sign? Like I know how to find like a buck's area or his bedding
right.
or rubs or scrapes. How long before you really felt like you had that recipe down?
So that was one thing I got good at. So there'd be a big field edge, might be a 40-acre field edge. I could walk that field edge, read all the sign coming in and out, mm-hmm. and literally got to the point where I could 100% be on the right trail that the biggest deer would come out and get my crack. So I started getting really good at that. And then it was like some of these deer, you go scout a whole other area, and the same thing. You could kill that same biggest buck when it was in that area. It
right.
would come out. So I got good at reading that sign and you know, big tracks, big sign, displays of dominance.
Mm-hmm.
And I started getting to where, you know, obviously you make a lot of mistakes when you hunted like I did. And that was taboo. You did not, man, leave that sanctuary spot going. You know, you don't want to be bumping these deer and stuff. And
right.
And the more I did it, the more I found, that's where this mobile stuff came in. I watched my success from moving on a daily basis just shoot through the roof. Even if you're sitting in a stand, it's a portable stand, three times in a row, your best time ends the first crack, and you just watch.
Yeah.
And I was smart enough to see that, and I'm like, you know, how do you cut loose from a spot that's pretty good and go to next? You know, would you, if you had a 2 160s come in on one day, would you drop down and go reset for another spot?
Personally, I want to say no, but I'm curious as what you're
I'd run like hell and say, this ain't what I wanted. I'm looking for this particular deer, and I would just leave.
Yeah.
So I've accomplished what I needed to there.
Okay. Like, you're searching for that next goal. You've got
right.
the one, you know, you're going for
well,
something.
Well, now you know before going in, so if a property doesn't have what you're after, that one you just didn't hunt for the year.
Right.
You search. And then when you find what you're after, you stay on that, you keep hunting it, but you never be complacent to think that that lead is going to hold through.
Gotcha.
So while
okay.
I'm hunting that, I get down in the middle of the day, head in the afternoon, and we go scout new spots and look for another okay. one. So you're getting a couple more eggs in that basket. Put the percentage
in
your favor.
With that being said, though, I mean, I think there's a misconception there, too, because a lot of guys are going to start second-guessing what they think is an awesome spot and the spot that'll get it done.
Yeah.
Now, there's always a couple different ways to skin a cat, right? I mean, if like you said, that – we don't want
like if that deer's in that area, that spot still could be a good spot.
Right. You don't want to necessarily – and it's just like all these people, they want the cookie-cutter answer. Okay, so I have to move every single day no matter what I see, no matter what I
– It doesn't apply that way.
Yeah, don't dive that deep into it. But
if I always say if the sign's red hot and the action's there, then your mentality was you don't overhunt a spot, that's a crock of shit. If it's red hot and it's happening, you stay on it until it – fizzles out, and then you do your moving. So
okay, so that's one thing a lot of people have, and I'll get into some of these specifics. You covered this one, Clarence. I'm sorry about these. This is an Instagram question, Clarence Pomkala. When did you kill your first buck? So we talked about that already. Yep. We talked about. Let's get in here too, because I have some detailed big buck questions I want to get to, but T. Ladson 91, what was your biggest learning curve right out of the gate, you think?
Oh, geez, I couldn't put my hand on it. It was a whole evolution or the curve. I think the thing would be to get over the what's the word I'm looking for? Failing. Not
getting hung up.
Worried about
failures.
Failing or burning something up. You know, you kind of ease in there, and you get around the edges, and then to just dive in and get it done.
Right.
So to this day, still, I'll find where a buck's bedded, and I'll manipulate him coming in and out of there because I got the piece of information I need.
Right.
But if you don't cooperate, and it ain't happening, I'm the first one. I'm just diving in, and I'm going to go kill him right out of that bed is what I'm going to do.
Okay.
And then for a little bit, you might burn that up. But once I got over that misconception that if you scare a deer, it's going to leave the county.
Yeah.
And I got more aggressive. Man, I started seeing my success just go through the roof.
Okay.
Know?
Well, so something I was going to get to, and we'll hit a lot of these questions here at the end. We'll chip through them. Is, you know, how you said, like, if a buck that's not there on the property, it's not what you're looking for, you go somewhere else and find.
If you're looking to set a goal and it's not there, I mean, you're.
Right. So.
Yeah, you're spinning your wheels. You know?
These big, giant bucks, like, you know, ones that are potential state record breakers in Wisconsin, like, we can dive into some of that too. Is, like, first of all, it's like I've never even had a deer that big, and maybe I just, that's. Right. Maybe I never will, or I'll never be able to find one because it's not there on places I can go. It's like once you find one, say, well, I guess a lot of it was before you're killing bucks well before the trail camera game. So, and I'm thinking a lot of these questions as I'm talking because I'm like, man, I want to break this down in so many directions. Mm-hmm. So let's just talk about, say, before trail cameras were big, you got a lead on, I mean, would you always see the buck? Would you see the sign first and then?
I'd go shining. I'd locate a farm that's got one on, knock on doors. I had a whole scenario for how to find. Because once you had it, you know, like I said, if you got a property that these guys go to the same property every year, and if you're stuck there, if a deer of the caliber is not there that you want, you got the rut that something might wander in, but your percentages are just against you. You need to go after your goal. And a lot of people don't realize that, you know, the Wisconsin state record was like 177 inches for years, which
really
they were knocking down bucks bigger than that with guns all over the state. So once I ran out of rope, and I got to that one buck that was missed the state record by about an inch, I thought, now I was realistic to know that, dude, you ain't shooting a bigger buck than this. This is
right, because it's
you know, in your head you're thinking that. So now I set my goal for net Boone and Crockett, and it's weird. I set my goal for it, and
I accomplished it. Is the buck you're talking about this guy?
That was my first. Yeah.
So the buck on the screen right now, that is right there. And that was that one of the bucks that – so did you have an idea that this buck could beat the record, the state record?
No, I didn't. It was close. That buck there, once I got past that, I thought I would never, ever shoot another bigger buck than that. And it's weird because I almost shot a bigger buck the next year. I was like, you know, pinching myself. Like, how the hell is this even happening, you know? And it's That was a big non-typical that was like 250. It's one of the big bucks I've ever seen in my career.
Really?
And, wow. Yeah, I blew it on that one. But it just, I learned, you know, the harder I worked, the harder I looked, the more successful I got. And then I thought to myself, you know what? It's anybody's game. And, you know, everybody wanted that. My lifelong dream was to hold a state record in Wisconsin. Never accomplished that. I failed at that. And then a little bit later, I wanted to get a crack at the typical world record. Was obviously what a bow hunter would shoot for.
Mm-hmm.
And it's weird. I shot for that. I hunted, and I've been in the game with two bucks that would probably have done just that. Again, failed at them both. Didn't get them, but it was what I wanted to do and one I wanted to chase.
Right, right.
And then once that got, I mean, some of the bucks I got now, there's not probably a lot bigger out there, so
yeah,
got a little, you know.
You sort of not really capped yourself off, but it's just.
Yeah. It's like we talked about before. I mean, I know we've had this conversation, but you get to a certain point to where whatever you're looking for, it becomes harder to find that deer and just get access to that deer than it does to actually kill that deer.
It's a needle in a haystack. And I've tried, you know, I'm trying to grow them. I'm trying to manage them.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen. All the things line up right, and where that's at, you got to go to other states, get other properties.
Realistically, you know, the caliber of deer we're talking about, too, I mean, the stars align with them kind of deer. They got the genetics, they have the habitat, they're getting fed, you know, they're healthy.
They have it all.
Once in a blue moon, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know, it's just a...
Well, but how do you find a needle in a haystack like that? You get in there and you roll around and you just, you got to keep pursuing.
But sure. For instance, the big one. The first big one, the record, that deer was actually, I mean, I like telling this because I was involved before I even knew I was involved. But
what year was that deer? What year did you kill that deer?
Oh, it was 90s. I don't remember.
96 or 96.
So we were like 6 years old.
Yeah, yeah. So I would get dragged in the car. You know, we'd go glassing.
You were probably eight maybe or something.
Yeah, maybe eight, so nine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would drag him along glassing.
So we used to do a lot of glassing all the time. Like that was...
I mean, use my kids and daughters to get access to property. You know?
Yeah, every day. Yeah. But that deer, prime example.
Raking yards and stuff like that, raking leaves.
Oh, dude.
Mowing, push
dude,
mowing.
Dude, I used to get drug over to houses to rake apples out of their yards. Like, and you know, it sucked. Yeah. I'm wanting to go ride my bike, and he's like, no, we got like five garbage bags or garbage cans of apples to fill. And then
we got
stung by bees and shit. I mean, it was just... Anyway, but that deer was spotted on a glassing mission, right?
Yep.
I mean, and then that gave the – so it's just another aspect of scouting. Cameras are making people lazy these days. It's sad to say, but it is. So much is people rely on these cameras so much.
It's a great tool. I mean, I spent hours and hours before the season even started just glassing and doing the homework.
Right.
You know, you guys are at church. I'm out in a swamp in the back of the church and the cattails drenched and wet and glassing, you know, deer coming out of the swamp.
Well, that's a common question here is, like, Byron Horton, I'd like to hear about killing big deer before trail cams. What did that process look like, both in off-season and during season? And there's a bunch of questions in here before trail cams.
Okay.
And I think there's a lot of guys that hinder how they hunt based off, like, kind of where you were going, Cody, based solely off of what's on the trail cams. I don't really get too concerned with what's on my cameras because...
But if you really break it down, it's time and how much time do you want to spend to doing something. Like you said, you were always doing something. You were always glass. You're always... There's most people want to take the easier... Oh, well, I don't have to go walk around. I can go set this camera
up. Here's how the success of everybody has gone up with a trail camera. Nobody in years past would do the work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they wouldn't even know that a buck of that caliber was on their property, and they would get discouraged. They wouldn't see it.
Yeah.
And they would just thought of, now they know that that buck is on a property, and it gets you the extra effort or wherewithal to go after it. You didn't have that in the past. So you either glassed, you went out and scouted and jumped them, mm-hmm. and physically, and we'll talk about that physical viewing of a deer versus all this new stuff that's out there.
We're seeing them through the season.
I knew cops and different. They would a bus driver. If you spot a big one, I had to word out. Well, you ever spot a big deer? Let me know. You know,
well, word of mouth is a huge thing.
Oh,
people overlook that too.
Loose lips, man. Silent partner.
I've hunted with people. You know, got cameras up, and the landowner's literally telling us, "Oh, well, there's a really good deer coming past here. Well, I got a camera there, and there's nothing good. It's all mediocre." Well. Dude, you're really cutting some stuff out, you know. I mean, it's
because the camera only shows what's in front of that tree.
But
if even a person tells you, You don't know. You don't know what a big deer is.
Yeah, you don't know that.
And I'd never used to ever not follow a lead. So I go research. The guy said, hey, this farm over here has got a couple of dandies, huge Pope and Youngs on them. Mm-hmm. I go in there and I jump them and they're 115, 120-ish bucks.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, you don't leave a stone unturned, but
yeah.
Pretty soon you get to be like where the one buddy of mine shot a I was hunting these big bucks in suburban Milwaukee one time, and my friend ended up shooting a 160-inch buck back then was just monstrous. And this farmer, who didn't know what a big deer was or what, he kept telling us about this huge buck that he kept combining, was in front of combine, wouldn't even move. And when he seen his buck, and he told me, it's way bigger than that one.
Man, oh, really?
I grabbed my shit, and I went and ran down there. And that's where that buck was. I missed it, son of a bitch, the second from last day of season. I put it at 250.
Holy shit.
The next year, somebody with a muzzleloader shot one just down the river that was 240. It was a new state record for muzzleloader.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know if it was the same deer, but and then did I ever tell you that story about the old guy in the bar? You know, you scout, telling him, everybody, he's in the bar. All drunk. Tell us about this whitetail like this. I'm
shit that happens in every bar right now.
Every night. And I'm like, yeah, right. So me and my brother hunted, and for some reason we decided to pack up our stuff early, go hunt, and get an early start home.
Yeah.
So we left a different route that day. So this guy's in the bar telling us about this monster buck at Highway C and H or whatever the hell.
You guys thought he was bullshitting.
Well, yeah. I didn't even pay attention to that.
Well, you think, yeah.
Well, I mean, it's like this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
G2s
on the way out.
Nobody says G2.
The season was over. Put our stuff away. We shined on the way out, and we didn't even know what highway we were on.
Yeah.
We put the light on. What is the chances of this?
Uh-huh.
A light on a buck that I swear to God to this day was 30 inches wide. And then we're shining this deer, and we never even done us yet. And when we turned the lights, there was a frickin' highway sign. I'm like, son of a bitch, we could have had a week on going after this buck.
Right.
You know, and back then, you could get permission anywhere you asked.
Yeah, because no one cared as much.
Ever since then, I don't care who the hell's telling me what. I'm checking it out.
Right,
making
right.
Making sure it's, you know.
That's funny, though.
Oh,
because
my God.
Everybody's heard that guy in the bar or wherever.
Yeah. And
a lot of them are deadly.
At the same time, it might be a bust, but why not check it out?
Yeah, right. That's a good tip.
You can't go wrong with checking it out.
Because it is, and then we've talked about it on the Working Class podcast, as you always hear the people, you should have seen the deer in my yard. It was huge. Yeah. Well, it's like, well, a lot of people talk about the body of a deer because they don't know. They all look big to people who don't hunt like that. That's a good story, though. And that's something else I want to get into, is just like some of the old, just cool stories you might have chasing those giant deer like that. And do you think that a lot of people get hung up on being scared to guess and check spots? Because that's been like my method. Like if I think a spot just looks good, I might just try it for an afternoon to see. Have you ever done that?
So an observation post. I've already gone into properties and specifically picked a tree and got way higher than I ever would hunt out of.
Yeah.
In a spot that you still probably could get something done, the sign looked good, but I can cover with the binoculars a lot of area and see what's coming out.
Right, right.
And that's a form of scouting. It's a little more difficult. And again, going in with that camera, I know guys to this day that there's huge bucks, and just because it's not coming by their camera. So I've had the experience now where I've been field testing and developing a camera.
Mm-hmm.
I set cameras out, and I watch what's going on the trail with these cameras. And I'll tell you, some of the stuff that I've seen is surprising, too. You got all kinds of deer that go by. They're relaxed. You get pictures of them.
Mm-hmm.
And you're seeing what the camera's seeing. But I'm sitting in my stand, and I'm watching a huge doe coming down a trail, a huge buck coming behind her, and she spots that camera.
Mm-hmm.
And does a huge loop around it.
Yeah,
jumps back on a trail. He follows her around it. When you checked your camera, you had no clue that happened.
The idea
that somebody can think that a one point of view
that you know
recon is telling you what's going on in that area is just fucking absurd.
Right? Yeah, yeah, no, it for sure is.
I don't care if we use it for inventory to tell what's on the property.
Yeah, yeah.
And you got guys. Oh, well, I got 16 cameras on this farm. Like. That don't mean a damn thing, honestly.
Yeah. Actually, it could be.
That just tells a story and what's right there.
Exactly.
What happens is mosey on by.
Could be damaging, too.
I mean, in that, definitely overdo that.
That's interesting, too. I've heard a lot of other people talk about, you know, big bucks avoid trail cams. I've heard a lot of guys I respect say, I swear they avoid them. Or, like, if they know they're there, they'll try and avoid them. And maybe that's true in some cases, but.
Every deer is different.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you something right now I've discovered, and I'll bring it out right now. I have a patent pending on what I think I figured out. So we're going to do a cellular camera in the near future.
Mm-hmm.
So
is that a big drop right now? Yeah. Do we just announce
well,
that?
Well, it's not, coming, it's but we're going to wait until we get
okay.
fixed. So,
so I was trying to make it like some.
I went and purchased some cellulars because I didn't have experience with them, and I used them
yeah.
last year. Now, and it could be the specific model. I'm not going to tell you whose model it was. If that's what cellular cameras are doing to whitetail, I will never put a cellular camera in the woods ever again and attempt to hunt with it. I've seen some stuff that just, I still to this day is.
I mean, it got to the point where really? late season we were doing specific tests on just heavily frequented trails. I mean, deep snow, just like routes that deer would not start avoid using. You toss a cell camera on there. I mean, these things were
pounded
going cold.
The shit. Trails.
I mean, it's.
I'll tell you one experience. Four cameras on a main trail that runs 1.75 miles through this property that this huge buck was running in October, in two, you know, October trails are, you know, you get a little rain, the leaves are on the ground, are just beat to shit. Point A to point B. Four cameras along the whole property line figuring, well, as soon as he pumps in one of these and is on it a little bit, I'm going to make it easy, you know, I'm going to do what everybody's doing. In 2 weeks, there was a beat to shit trail. Looped around the one, gapped back on the trail, dumped back around the other one, avoided all four of those cameras on that trail. That's almost impossible to have happen.
Do you think it's what's basically tipping those cameras off these bucks?
Tell you
them
that.
Okay, that's what we can't get. Okay, so there's something. Okay, that's what I was trying
there's
to get in.
Something
I know
there going on. It you know.
Interesting. Okay.
And now, so these guys got a lot of cellular cameras on baits and minerals early. A deer in velvet on a food source. Human interaction is a whole different animal than during a season, what's going on out in the field. It's a whole different scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And some cameras are different than others.
Mm-hmm.
So some cameras we found it with ours. They don't spook to our low glow bulbs, but mm-hmm. I have other cameras that are low glow bulbs that I will not video with them because as soon as they see that light, they're all wigged out and they just run, you know. So
it's lensing too. But
yeah, it's all different stuff.
But, like you said right off the bat, deer are different. I mean, these deer aren't the same. All of us, we're different. Like, you're going to tolerate different shit than I will.
Yeah.
He's going to tolerate a whole different set of things. He might be cagier than all three of us. You know what I'm saying?
Right. You got to start to wonder, though, why do I always get one picture of a huge buck, and then I can't get another picture of my camera?
Dude, you know, it's...
Every time I do this, I get one picture, and then I don't. Well, I physically seen it last year, and I'll tell you if I could have.
Well, I can't wait for this podcast to be over so I can know about it, because that's me. Like, what you're describing is me. Right. And
remember, during the season,
Cameron and I talked about it on the way up here, kind of what we're talking about, but I'll let you keep going. I'm sorry. That's interesting shit.
You
got to
think about all this. Okay, so now you're hunting during the season. You see the reaction that a doe comes through and cuts your track
mm-hmm.
during the season.
Yeah.
All right, now it's a virgin sit, hit your track. Now you're telling me that if you go in there every couple of days and you're messing around and you got a camera that spooks deer or you're, I mean, you can't tell me that's like burning up a whole forest, what you're scenting. So what we've kind of did and developed with our cameras is, and what I've kind of done is I don't get up tight anymore. I stay back from a distance. I zoom it in. I'll take food plot and I'll watch from a distance instead of screwing a spot up.
Right. Right.
You want another quick story of that camera? So I put a cell camera on. Huge buck was on a property. Actually, I screwed him out of it. He could have killed it twice, but that's another story.
Cody's like, fuck.
This camera, I was on a primary. I got all kinds of stands around this particular area. And from them stands, all the big bucks I see all head to one spot in a draw.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a primary scraping there.
Mm-hmm.
And I leave it alone. And now that I want to kill this one, this deer's in the area, I'm thinking I'm going to go put this cell camera on that primary. And as soon as he starts working it, I'm diving in for the kill.
Yeah.
So I put that. I even told him. I said, I set up a span. I'm like 7 foot off the ground, a small pine. I'm point blank. I got the camera there. As soon as that thing starts heating up, I'm in there, right?
Yeah.
Nothing. And I read the sign. It was red hot in there. I went, read the sign. And I was like, dude, I'm not getting any pictures. I got one, like, picture of a doe. That spot was red hot. Even if they didn't hit the scrape, I had it set so I would see stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So I told him, screw it. I'm diving in. This morning, I went into that stand. There's, 20 yards away, there's a camera. And I could have shot three bucks over 150 actually 160-ish in the morning, uh-huh. all out of that stand, red hot, shit going on all over. And here's that red hot scrape that's usually just went ice cold.
Yeah.
And nothing. Right in that little zone. But over here, the deer came through here. They're just staying away from that spot. So
it's crazy because
I've seen it with my own two eyes. You know?
You're going to hear, I mean, through this podcast, through different episodes, I mean, we're going to hear a lot of stories and a lot of stuff. Yeah. But if you think about it, or when I think about it, and I think of all the times that I screwed up or lost a chance or fucked myself over on some buck, and even all the stories I've heard from Dad, and I've heard damn near probably them all, but it all starts, you can make the correlation with trying to do shit that just isn't, like you said, you started to try, like, why were you even fucking around with those cameras? Like, that those cameras costed you that buck that year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think
they
did. Well,
because we're developing.
Yes, but people look, I think they're always going to look for, it's natural to look for that easier in a sense.
Okay, here's, I'll give you a perfect example.
Mm-hmm.
Tree stand hunting is phenomenal for whitetail.
Mm-hmm.
The tool that was out there was not phenomenal, so I took that tool and I made it phenomenal.
Right, yeah.
Cameras that are out there is a race to the bottom. They're all getting cheaper, junker. I started looking at myself and wondering, why am I running and spending all this time when I get out there, and I can't even see what the hell the picture is.
Yeah.
I said, I can do better than this. So I started coming up with an idea.
Yep, and development on a camera is one thing, and development on a product is the other. But when we're talking about success in killing deer, too, it's like what I look at it as is, and even I noticed the only years that I came up shorthanded from getting something on the ground are years that I was relying on cameras or that I wasn't doing what I know works.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, or
utilizing them properly.
Yeah, yeah. Right. I mean, like you said, you know, use the cameras, but don't use them as a crutch. I mean, don't make them a lifeline. You know?
I kind of have a similar story. Like, I won't go deep into it. I've talked about it on working classes where I had some cell cams out and some other cameras, and I was, like, relying on them too much, where it kind of made my brain go crazy, and I was too reliant on, well, there's a picture of the buck here and then a picture of the buck here, where I should have been hunting the sign more than the picture.
Here's the deal. You know the camera did its job.
Yeah.
It told
you
that buck is in your woods.
Yeah.
Man, roll up the sleeves and go get them now.
Yeah.
You got the tools to do it. You know, you don't need to see that picture. You know what? If you think that you're going to put a camera out and then you get the picture on that trail and you're going to go to that trail and you're going to kill them on that trail, that happens sometimes.
Yeah.
But it's not going to happen all the time.
Right. No.
And there's guys doing it in suburban areas with cameras that are just getting it done because they got it figured out.
Right.
But you got to use it all. Smart, you know.
And people are going, just wait. I think they're spending way too much. They're looking for some crazy mythical algorithm for trail camera pictures versus like the.
I think you're right. I think you're right.
They are. I talk to guys that
you almost get nerd out on it too much.
Yeah.
Well, you know? I talk to guys that are literally like filing and backlogging buck pictures from 5 years ago and different, and they're correlating this and they got all these theories and I'm like, what have you killed in the last 5 years? Like just curious. Like how many of these?
It's a tough question.
Well,
you know, it's
one of those things where like. You're spending way too. If that's your hobby and you're trying to do it for like for research purposes, so, but the same guy is asking me, "Well, how come I'm not killing any deer?"
Mm-hmm.
I think just clear your mind to that shit, and I'll admit it too.
It's a tool to get a job done.
It gets in your mind, like you said.
Yeah.
You're thinking that affects every thought process you have in the woods, having all those pictures.
Yep.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, like you know, a lot of people ask me, "Oh, hey, you still getting pictures of that one deer?" Like even last week, I'm like. No, I haven't. I haven't looked. Like, what do you mean? You're crazy. You haven't looked. You haven't.
I gotta get
down
to Kansas and check the card out and see what's done.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I get asked that too. You got any good? The other day, you got any good pictures yet? I'm like, I don't really stress over it. You know,
see, what our property here and a few others we've had. What we have for deer is what we got. We don't get the wanderers in from the rut. So what's nice is it's a blessing, but it's a curse. In other words,
mm-hmm.
for me. When I get all the pictures and I know every deer on this property and there's not a one I want to shoot,
and
it's a horrible, horrible season. Because I know there's going to be a two-day window that the woodlot over here, for 2-3 days, there might be a buck from somewhere else will come through during the rut.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's that minimal.
Right. Well, I like the mystique of not always knowing exactly what's out there.
That's huge, too.
Because I remember when a kid...
Yeah, you dream about the...
Yeah, it keeps you fired
you
up.
You picture...
It keeps you getting out there. Oh, there could be a magnum here, you know? I mean, it's just...
And, you know, you picture, you know, the giants coming through.
Yeah, but when I start doing that, I did that last year a little bit, and I thought to myself, oh, my God, am I one of those guys now that's just... waiting for a fantasy buck. I said, it's just time to get the hell out of this tree and go, looking around, man.
At the same time, you got to stay.
Well, when I was a kid, you know, we had the 35-millimeter trail cam, and that's what, like, it never worked. I always did the half-hour photo development, and you never got anything. Mm-hmm. But that's what kept me motivated. Like, I would watch the hunting videos in camp and then be like, there's one of those out there, and that's what would keep me out because I didn't know.
Well, you know, that one there that was the number two that one year, we had the trail cameras out at that time, and we found sheds of that buck, and it was the old one with the film. So we had to go into Walgreens, me and a buddy of mine, to check the card. And we were both in there. We were both sitting, and we're clicking through the pictures, and boom, we got a picture of that son of a bitch, and we're like this. We're like looking around, like, is anybody looking? And we're, so we were sitting there staring, and he's, oh, my God, he's back. We had, you know, the sheds from last year. And my friend was sitting there paralyzed, didn't know what to do. He said, what do you do? I said, I don't know what you're doing, but I'm going to the swamp and killing that son of a bitch. I left. I went, got all my equipment out on the table. You might even remember that. Dissecting it, putting tape on there, quieting everything up, just now it's game time.
Yeah.
Now I got what I want to go after, and I'm going to go get him, and I'm going to try and do it on video. So, you know, that's the type of stuff you
– it's awesome.
We'll keep you rolling.
And that buck, yeah, that one died shortly after, but – a lot of guys would be like, oh, let me go get this camera back out there and let me get in.
Nope.
He didn't even give two shits about the camera.
Like, it's like too much strategy around it, like get in there type of thing. You have to go right in.
Yeah, I actually got to miss school for that track job. We got to
that's awesome.
We got to go take that out of there. But
that was awesome.
Well, should we get back to the story a little bit?
We'll get to some questions because I know we were building up to like the start of the company. Is kind of we stopped right before that. But let's hit these. That way we can kind of answer these. Hopefully we can get to all of them here.
Started a company, the name and all that stuff too? Or,
maybe we should just talk about that quick and then jump into the listener questions.
Okay, so.
Or we can do it as we go, and if it pops up, then you can answer it, however you want to do it.
Here's one from Chad. And he mentioned or asked a question. So this is probably around that time where you were hunting Lang Lake County heavy, and I think the stands would have been around, but did you ever come close to killing that old state record up in that neck of the woods? I think he's wanting to know.
The one that was a state record?
Yeah, at that time.
Mm-hmm. So the answer to that is yes, but the year before. So he wouldn't have been a state record the year.
Oh, okay.
But that deer I'd spotted on a property I had to hunt, and it was actually living on public land, an 80 of public.
No shit.
And I was hunting that deer, and guys were, I remember that, guys would drive up on their own to see where I was sitting with a climber, like right off a stone road. They're like, look at this clown.
What's he doing?
Yeah, well, there's like 170-inch plus crossing this road, dumping into this 80 to bed every freaking day, so that's what I'm doing here. So then I got down, did some scouting, went back in there, and I jumped the whole bachelor group, and that buck was in there. I went in there and set up on that, and I came close to putting an arrow on that deer, and there was another 10 that was just a tank with it. Probably if that 10 would have came in too, I probably would have shot that even.
Oh, really?
With that buck. Bigger, heavier frame, but not all the points.
Gotcha.
That deer, basically in a year, just put on all mass. He had the frame.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go back next year, and I'm going to hunt that buck, right? So I pull up, and it looked like a public hunting ground with the parking.
Yeah.
Cars everywhere. I went in and scouted. There was a bait pile every freaking 10 acres, and there was probably 7 or 8 guys hunting in there.
Really?
And it just and I didn't know the buck was back.
Right.
And if I'd have known the buck was back, I'd have probably went and dealt with that mess. It just turned me off, and I thought, screw it, I'm going to go. And I didn't realize somebody had spotted the deer.
Oh.
And then everybody in town found out about it, and they were just hammering at 80. Yep. So I still could have been on a private piece across the street.
Right.
But all the chaos, I just left it, and I had other big deer to hunt.
Yeah.
And then I think one of your buddies was up north and said, hey, you know that buck you were hunting last year? Somebody just shot it in that 80, and it's going to be a new state record. And I was just like,
oh, fuck.
You know?
Can you imagine?
And what happened is rut came in, doe and heat went through there, and that buck didn't give a shit. There was 8 guys. It ran across every pile, and this guy ended up smoking it. So,
crazy.
So I was on to that deer, too, up in and dude, there's big deer bigger than that up in that Land Lake County at 100 public grounds.
Yeah, there's so much ground up there. It's crazy. I want to segue into this real quick because I've seen a question on here that I particularly like the answer to this question. Or I know it. I've heard the story. But so the question is, how did you first think of the casted aluminum platform?
And Eric Votis underscore outdoors on Instagram asked this.
And the what I think of is this, the old stories of you filing down and using scrap pieces to make the original forms and that mm-hmm. kind of old. So maybe just run us through real quick, like, okay, what birthed the casting idea? And then tell us a little bit about grinding through that day job to make those molds and how that came to be.
So I worked for an automobile manufacturer for years, and we dealt with castings in there. But in my stand quest with portables, we had aluminum and wood stands. This is before even the verge of metal stands in the market. And I'd silicone the joints, and I'd double screw them, and I'd do everything I could to try and quiet up these stands. And mm-hmm. you get that creak.
Yeah.
And you always had the moment of truth when it came time and you had a buck and you had to just shift your weight. Even though I had it kind of taken care of and I had as quiet as possible,
mm-hmm.
man, you were a scared cat to even make that move. So then I did that, and then the whole industry switched into metal, and I was sitting with the best wood stand and aluminum out on the market, from marine plywood, you know, quieter than most.
Right.
And I was left, I can't be welding, bending all this shit and all this manufacturing. I got the money to do that, and I wouldn't have the wherewithal. So I just was thinking about it, and It came to me that idea that, you know, I seen these grates that were made out of castings and mm-hmm. the stuff on tractors and that, and I thought, man, if I could just have this all one piece. And then when we did prototype welds, I welded up assemblies. Even with welded assemblies, the expansion and contraction of different tempers and metals,
yeah.
you get sand in there, they'd crack, they'd pop, they'd make noise, they'd amplify.
Yeah.
So all these guys now are out there with this high-tech metal stands. I'm still sitting with a wood and aluminum stand that's quieter than theirs, but you're not going to sell a guy that, hey, look at that old dinosaur, that this
right.
is better.
Yeah.
And then I came up with the idea of the casting. In the first prototype, when I went out and hunted with it, man, I was just, not that I was going to have a business or start it.
Yeah.
Holy cow, I can do whatever I want, make a move whenever I want, and not even have that thought process in my head.
So in your head at this point, it's just like it's a personal gain only
at
this point.
Exactly. I'm going to start knocking these
like,
babies
nobody's got what I have, and you didn't even think about like mass production and the business.
And if we had video back then, if you seen how I would dance on a tree stand with a buck coming in, turn completely around, drop on a knee, lean out, and smoke one that's coming just out of range. I mean, if that could have been on video, not a peep coming. I'm like, this is like, holy cow, I got something here.
Right.
So I used to sell stands out of my garage, wood ones for years. I already built up a track record of people. And when that first cast aluminum stand came out, boy, but it was three times the cost anybody else's.
Yeah.
Man, guys were loving it. It was a hard sell. Well, I can go buy three of his to one of yours. Well, go buy three of his.
Right.
Good luck. Yeah.
So what year is this, roughly?
Oh, God. Let's see. I don't even remember when the first castings came out. Would have been 90s we went. 89, 90 maybe?
Really?
So we had a company. My wife thought of the name. She thought of Lone Wolf because I was a loner. And it made a lot of sense because bow hunters were solitary guys. They didn't hunt with a pack. Gun hunters were doing the pack deal. We decided to trademark it. And I thought I had some harebrained idea. I was going to make a living selling these wood stands. When I look back at it now, I'm like, wow, are you freaking lost? And just kept at it, you know, and kept as a hobby, just kept modifying. But when the cast stand got out, and then I could see how much more refined this was than everybody else's.
Yeah.
Now I just had to find a way to get them in a stand. Once I get you in that stand, you're done.
A lot of people overlook this too, and they get caught up on the, yes, it's a cast stand. Yes, you thought of the idea of the casting. Yes, you came out with the first cast stand. You're not taking into account this thing leveled more and better than anything the button system, the fastening system, the offset system, like all these things were developed with this stand. It's not just the casting.
Yeah, that was the base because I started out with a climber.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I think we went into the casting when we first started making a hang on. You've seen the stands that we had. So we had a 2-piece climber that weighed 22 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Little 3/4-inch backpack straps on it, running around in Landlake County with
shoelaces that cut right into your fucking skin.
Hey man, we were hardcore, and we'd be backpacking in and hunting with these stands, and they were mobile. They, I had them in an open position. Then the next year, I made them so they folded down. Then I made them pack together. I said, "Man, I'm onto it, man. I got a system here." And we'd hunt. Landlake County had the most public and like BML type land that you could get anywhere you can go, you can find land to hunt there. So
yeah, yeah.
We had a cabin there, so we could go anywhere, and we'd go in, we'd hunt with these stands. And then as we sold more and more of them, I think I told you this story a million times. Me and my brother are in the middle of nowhere.
This is a good one, though.
And two guys
thanks, Cody.
Get in our shit where we were hunting, and they got our stands on their back, and they're hiking a little deeper. And I'm like, man, this ain't working for me, you know? So, but we made some money on it, so.
That's awesome. So what year is this? This is early?
That would have been before, not yeah, before in the 80s.
In the 80s, okay. Yeah,
so then we did the casting, and we made it evolved, like you said, into a hang on them because we went into a chamber that didn't have it.
Uh-huh.
And I made a two-piece climber that was 16 pounds, just a ninja.
So, yeah, it's insane, gun type especially stand, for the know? Time. So when the hang-on casting stand came out, I mean, what were you using to get in the tree to the stand? Did the stick come at the same time? Did the stick come later?
So when I first started using stands, a lot of times I'd go out. I was a beast like him. I used to lift weights, and I was an athlete. I'd literally climb up a tree with nothing and just – with the stand and then slap it on in between some limbs and that. Then I got to going with the screw-ins.
Make so you
it
just
little,
like climb a tree and
I
then
could
put
climb,
it
climb, bear hug a tree, put a stand on my back and get to a limb and just climb in there.
That's hardcore.
And then
no lifelines
the years,
or
as
nothing.
As the years went on, you know, I'd be getting in these trees and once I was hanging from a limb and my mind was saying, okay, lift, and my body wasn't doing it. I didn't physically have the effort to do it anymore. So I got, long story short, I contracted Lyme's disease in
no
this
shit.
Process and almost killed me. And the beast that I was now just, you know, I didn't have the energy and the level I had, but I still could
to get up there now. Yeah.
I could still
the beast
run
is all
your
of
average
sudden,
man. So.
I won't say it. You're an average guy. Right, I was going to say something else, but I didn't want to get punched on the second podcast yet.
So now you got now I'm running around with and people don't realize this either. The stock stand that I had modified.
Mm-hmm.
I was running around with five screw and steps. In a little hang-on that weighed with this new one weighs now before you guys ever had anybody even had a chance to do it.
Yeah.
Because I milled the bottom off and I made a specific one for my – I cut the seat down, did a bunch of things, and I ran and gunned with that.
Do you still have this setup somewhere?
I think that one got probably ripped off.
Yeah, probably not that one.
Or it's hanging in an Illinois lease for the last 20 years on one of those trees in there. But
I'd have that if it was.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
So I'll tell you a quick story. So this stand was so light, I had a brand-new Chevy truck.
Mm-hmm.
I was out scouting with the stand on my back, took my fanny pack off, was screwing around in the back of my truck, and I literally went to get in my truck with my stand on my back and ripped my new freaking seat of my thing because I forgot I had it on my back. It was that light, you know?
That's
so
awesome.
It was a nice thing. Okay, so now screw-ins took some effort, and I wanted a quicker little way to do it, and then I developed what could be the optimal speed, stability, versatility to get in a tree, and that's when I developed the climbing sticks. And,
see, that's awesome, man.
I run around with a couple of those in a stand, you know, still lightweight, but quicker than a screw-in.
One strap.
And you got your sequence in right instead of, you know, you'd be a little too tight here, a little too much of a
screw. And that's the thing that's great about those is they can almost be used as, like, you know, an aid, too. Like, you don't have to take – some people – well, shit,
dude,
okay, if I got to get up there.
Look where the market has gone on climbing sticks.
Oh, no.
Everybody – that's the way to get up in a tree.
Yeah,
every manufacturer's got it.
For sure.
Oh, that's it. Yeah.
So.
Well, that, too, and something I learned just from shed – I mean, I always knew, like, higher is not always, like, the remedy for the situation. Like, it all just depends. But there were some stands when we shed hunted this winter or the spring, Cody, that you'd be like, oh, check out this setup. And I'd be like – oh, dang, the setup's like 7 foot. But I'm like, dang, that's low. And you're like, yeah, but you didn't see it till I told you to look for it. I'm like, if I was a deer, I would have got shot.
Yeah.
So it just doesn't always – it's all how you hang it.
And how you hunt it, too. There's a big part of it.
Yeah, see, some guys out there, it's tough to say, but can't get away with hunting that low. Like, you just –
I used to always tell him, just disappear in the woods, and he'd always get pissed off me. What are you talking about, just disappear? And all of a sudden, one day, it like dawned on him. Oh, I get it now. Just you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we can go into other cast about all
that
stuff.
See, we'll dive deeper into that.
These are all episodes. All these
little
things are going to be their own episodes eventually, which is I'm excited for it because I'm like I'm finding myself shutting the hell up and just like listen.
We can do a whole show on high versus low on all the things on that. So if we
so basically the casting led into eventually developing sticks, and then people are buying the stands. You got a reputation, and then it just. Did it just fire off from there and it just blew up? Or
So I'd hunt like a maniac, and then in my off season I had no hobbies except fishing would fill the void.
Yeah.
So I would take my stand, tear it down, and I'd make it better and perfect it. So it was an evolution of right. development that came into this stand, not just you put it out there and you had a market. And
yeah, yeah.
Even when we started getting the dealers, the reps were like, Jesus Christ, it's the best stand out. It's better than anything. Just stop making it better. Let's sell it now. Right. I'm making this thing for me. I got to hunt with it.
Yeah, so, yeah. Which says a lot, because if you're going to spend the money and buy the product, you want the person designing the product to be using it exactly how you would want to use it.
Right.
Oh, and yeah, I think 100%. There's a lot, especially nowadays in the hunting industry, there's a lot of companies that are owned by non-hunters and just suits.
So this is a good point to go into this aspect of this. So I was constantly wanting lighter, more compact, because I was a mobile guy.
I guess we should pick this up.
I don't know if it was
on camera. You're pointing at this, I think.
Well, one of the prototypes that's out. We'll just let you know. It is coming, the ambush. But so I would take the stands we had, and then, like when I first came out with the stand, my seat didn't flip out of the way. And a dealer called me and said, man, you got to have this thing flip out of the way. And I'm like, well, it works good for me. I had the seat at the height where it was a crease in my thing when I wanted to stand. I could literally lean against a tree without even moving a seat.
Yeah.
Too short. But everybody that hunts out of a hang-on, first thing they do is stand up, they want to flip their seat out of the way. So I had to change some things to make it for general population. Seat's too low. Your average guy, I got short legs. I had to bump that seat up so it was more for the average guy.
Right.
And then the stand. We didn't want to go too far, so we went with bigger stands. Great. The bigger guys are happy now, but us smaller guys, back to it. I cut off the front and added on years back and forth, and I'm going to tell you what I came up with right now. I'm going to tell the competition the perfect distance for everybody and for your all-around deal, you got to have at least 27 inches off from a tree.
Mm-hmm.
And that seat height at 20, even with the new bigger cushions they came out with, and is still about a little inch too tall for me. Sitting on a raw seat for me is about right for my height.
Mm-hmm.
But we found ways to manipulate that with tilting your platform and stuff. But
yeah,
just to bring the point is the stand now is perfect for the general population. Now this whole custom gear deal,
mm-hmm.
take that stand, man, and make it your own. Customize it from where we did all the work. This is the size. We can't go any smaller. We can make you a smaller stand.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to hunt out of it two times. You say, this is a great thing. And you're going to want to go back to
the original size. It's the standard for that reason.
The weight versus benchmark. Size and huntability is you know, it's it.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
XOP, Lone Wolf Custom Gear. You look at all the hang-ons.
Mm-hmm.
They're all right at the right.
Right.
That's the size.
For a reason, yeah.
Now, we make a bigger platform for a bigger guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Or a stand you're going to park. You know, I like to be in a bigger platform when I'm sitting and just go to a spot that's already set up.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't want to carry around another 6 pounds of weight.
No, so. Yeah, especially when you're trying to do, you know, disappear into the woods with, you know, your small stand and make it work for you. Yeah, it's cool. And that is a good point. Like, with the custom gear, all the stuff is, you know, it's designed for the hardcore guy. Like, it's maybe not the setup for everyone, but
right.
mobile hunting is effective hunting. You know, and that's what you're trying to do. You got to remember, there's a lot of guys that are
stuck having to be mobile hunters. They don't have access to land.
That's true.
They public hunting ground. Now, what's your little one up on everybody else that's in there? I'm going to be able to get back in there because I'm carrying 2.5 pounds less than that guy. He's going to be out of gas and want to sit closer to the road or whatever. Yeah.
The ease of setup too.
It's your advantage, man, and huntability. And quickness and. And the way it all packs together, that's a big, big thing. So,
let's hit a couple more questions here, getting closer to the end. This one's kind of a funny question, considering what we're doing right now. At Public Land Whitetails, did you want to ask this one?
No, you can ask it. I'd like to freaking answer that, even though it's a question for him.
Here's the question.
You want to take a stab at it first?
At Public Land Whitetails said, why did you avoid doing podcasts and YouTube videos?
Avoid doing it. You mean over the years?
Yeah, that's. I think that's what he means.
I mean, yeah. So,
do you know the answer to this?
Well, I'm just. I can say what I. Well, you can. All right, you can take. You can take it.
Let's go back to.
You didn't even know what a podcast was a couple months ago. So,
right.
No, I mean, it's.
Dude, I retired 10 years ago and kind of was out of the scene for whole things. I think I accomplished what I needed to do. Was just kind of disappearing into the. I thought I'd have my, where I wanted to retire, what I wanted to do, and it just.
Yeah,
it didn't work out, you know. Even though I got huge bucks running all over like I wanted, I got all the property I want, it still is not the same as being in the game and doing what you guys are doing now.
Yeah.
And I made this statement 100 times, I'll make it again. Everything in this house I'd take and throw right out in the garbage if I can have the first season of whitetail hunting.
Mm-hmm.
Chasing around does with a recurve, if I can have that back, I'd change it all for that.
That's awesome.
And that is the heroin fix that I got then, and I've been chasing that freaking feeling for 40 years, and you can't get it back, man. You just, you know what I mean? So
it's not like you were like, I'm not going to do YouTube and podcasts.
Here's the thing. I think you have people out there that are looking to be known and looking to – this is a passion of his that he's been doing for a long time. I don't think it was ever even in your realm of your brain like, oh, well, I'm going to market this to YouTube and try and make something out of my knowledge. It's just everybody who's known Dad or who's seen him at the shows or who's talked to him, I think, can collectively say, like, he'd be the first person to help you out with a situation, talk to you. It's just never been, I guess, in our – and even me, I'm behind the time with technology, man.
You are. I will attest to that. No offense, but –
It's
fascinating that you guys are kind of removed from it a little bit, but I think that's like me being like, hey, let's do this podcast and us coming together. That's what's cool about the information is it's not something that you guys heard from another podcast or through a video. It's shit you guys know because you do it.
I've told him a million times before this even was years ago, before this started. I'm like, how does a guy get away going on that and talking about what he's talking about? He doesn't know his ass from a hole in the ground. He's wrong. Whatever. And he's teaching all these young guys it wrong, and it pisses me off, you know?
Yeah. And
so to just say this is one reason. It's something I've been hearing him for a while, but we wanted to get out there and bring a stream of information to guys looking to learn about whitetail hunting, the right facts.
Because
there's so many people out there. You see it in all these industries. You see guys.
Oh, yeah.
I see it in the fitness industry. There's guys posting all day like they've won a bunch of titles or they're these big proclaimed and they don't know a goddamn thing. They're just it's become a world of Insta stars.
So what I did to him when he was young, and he's probably bitched at this about you. I didn't go and tell him and cater him to. I have give him bits and pieces of information and let him learn on his own. Like he always said, why do you set these freaking food plots up? You can't hunt on them. Learn how to kill a deer coming to these, not being on them, and you become a better hunter. So you can do things like that. And tell you the truth, there was stuff I knew back in the day that I really didn't want everybody else to freaking know. I had some stuff figured out. And, you know, you're a competitive guy. Then my neighbor knows it, and he knows it. Yeah. And all of a sudden, and guys are learning.
Yeah.
The new generation are smart kids.
There's so much information. You know?
But it's not all about information, too. It's common sense. You got to start taking an account.
Yeah.
You know, you're hearing this, and you got to start questioning. That doesn't make any sense to me. You know what? A lot of times it doesn't make any sense because it doesn't make any sense. And go on your own and learn.
Yeah.
And that is a huge
something
thing.
I wanted to go back on too, like how you were saying all these guys that are like putting out podcasts that are saying repeated information they heard somebody else say. How many guys, and we've kind of broken this down a little bit, if you look at hunting podcasts, how many of the hosts that are putting out information are actually killing deer consistently? It's pretty few and far between.
And I don't know because, like, you know,
you're kind of out of it.
But. Well, you know this, but, like, I think I've listened to probably now a total of two podcasts in complete, which is, you know, I'm trying to get into it. But I'm just, I guess I'm more of a, I consider myself definitely a little bit more of an old soul when it comes to that. But,
But it works perfect for you guys are sharing content because none of it's bullshit. Because it's stuff that's all worked for you. So
yeah, and it's just...
And it may not work for everybody, brother.
It might not.
It might not.
And that's the thing. It's our take. It's the stuff that I've picked up from him. It's the stuff I've learned on my own. It's the stuff that he's spent years and years
perfecting. Dude, I want to make a statement too here now with the start of all this. A group of guys that have got onto all this and been hunting over the years, decades that have gone into this. We don't even have to mention a lot of their names. A lot of them guys are the most successful hunters in this industry right now. And there's a lot of guys that aren't in the industry that are doing it on their own.
Mm-hmm.
That, dude, if you see the shit they're putting down,
there's
guys that I'm on the same level playing field with them when I sit down and talk whitetail because they're getting it done. So some of these guys are going to be working with us in the future.
Yeah, and we'll eventually have guests on, too.
I want you to learn what works for him is totally different than what – I look at him, I say, you got to be shitting me, dude.
Yeah.
He's getting it done with what he's learned. So I take in everything from every guy. And one of the biggest things I think I learned over 40 years of doing shows and talking to people, with most guys, is it's all a fear of failure.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to frickin' fail, and they just don't have...
Fear of failure and motivation to work. I mean, I think...
Well, that's a...
Motivation to just... put in work for a lot of this is a big factor, I think.
And the thing, too, like what you experience and how you, I think, develop your own strategies and your own things and the way you set your stand and all these little micro things that you learn, you're only going to learn on your own. I think we used this at before. You know, you're in a street fight, man. You're only going to learn until you get thrown in. You can prepare for that shit as much as you want, but until you're getting...
Until you hit the face.
Until you're getting cracked in the face, you better start doing something. And,
yeah.
I remember... Well, I was hunting a buck specifically one year and, you know, not wanting to ask him, you know, anything, trying to do it on my own. And, you know, he got away, never got him killed. And, you know, the season ends and, you know, it pretty much comes out that he knew exactly where the hell to kill that deer the whole time. But he never fucking said anything to me. For one, he's a dick. And for two,
he's a dick.
He wanted me to
big dick.
He wanted me to figure it out on my own. But, you know, I'm grateful for things like that, too.
Yeah.
I did the same thing. I had to figure this out all on my own.
Yeah.
And when I read hunting magazines, I don't read articles. I look at pictures, just like the Playboy, buddy.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit about the article. I want to see pictures. And I don't care what this guy's doing or that guy. You go in, get into your group, and you can't get – I mean, there's guys out there. You're going to get some bits and pieces. Take them with a grain of salt and utilize them, but there's just not a – you know, you're going to have to make some mistakes.
Yeah.
Get in there, take an account about this scent.
That's when you're going to learn the most is
think
when
you
fuck
up. Think about it. You ever hear anybody in the whitetail industry – tell you that they don't give a shit about the scent and the wind direction, man, spit in their face.
It makes me freaking angry for another episode.
Yeah, these are all episodes that we're going to break down.
How about this? Should we kick this one out with this good funny one at the bottom here?
Yeah,
funny one. Wow.
So not a funny one, but this is
what we'll close on, and then we'll leave people wanting more with all these topics because we could do an 18-hour-long episode.
This is Josh Owen. So he said, you know, amongst all this, it would be nice to hear about some funny or the most memorable good time type hunting story that you have. I know you're a man when it comes to strategy. And whatnot, but sometimes it's nice to hear kind of sitting around the campfire type talk. So give us a funny hunting experience or a wild hunting story or something.
All right, so my experience with a buddy of mine years ago was invite me out to Connecticut to hunt, where there's no big deer. Oh, come on, man. Every year you got to come out. We have a front. I said, dude.
The East Coast boys right now are like, shit.
This ain't about fun for me, okay? I don't do freaking fun with whitetail. I says,
yeah.
There's no big deer out there. What am I going to come out there and waste the time to do it? So years go by, and he finally talks me into going out to hunt with these guys. And there are no big deer out there. And so we're running. He's got all these primes. He's got access to a bunch of properties. And we're going and we're checking all these spots out. And I go in there and spend just 10 minutes. I just run through the whole piece. But I got my freaking tennies on in the snow when winter just covering it.
Yeah.
I said, this is shit. Let's get out of here. What do you mean this is shit? This is my best property. I said, there ain't anything bigger. Let's get out of here. What do you mean? You know, what did you see or look at? You know,
yeah.
I said, why don't you tell me, what's the biggest deer you've ever seen on this property? What's on it this year? So, well, there's like a 140-inch buck on here. Well, that's what I think is about right on here, about a 140. Let's get out of here. So,
right, which is probably a giant for Connecticut.
Right, and so we're running around. But just the time that I had, now I know what a lot of guys that have friends and hunt together, the camaraderie, my stomach hurt for a week. By the time I got back from this trip. And I can tell you a couple of these stories about getting permission on a piece of property that these two gay guys owned. It was a mountain and shit. And getting access. They let us park in their lot. And we all went up to hunt. And when we came down to get in our cars, they went out to eat. And they had two dogs that were the size of a black bear loose. They had an electronic fence around the property. And we couldn't get to our cars. And they wanted to rip our heads off. They were, what are the two biggest breeds they are?
Great Danes?
Yeah, Great Danes.
Bigger
or
than
like,
that, it was a Bull Mastiff or whatever.
Yeah,
Tibetan
yeah.
Mastiff.
So, yeah. And now I'm hearing all this commotion. I'm coming down because I went way up on this mountain. It took me the longest to get down.
Yeah.
And they're screaming and yelling going on down there. And one of his friends is on his grounds on his hands and knees. And he's barking. And this dog knows an electric fence. And this guy's nuts. He's drunk. And his face is 12 inches from this thing just screaming. I'm like, what the hell is going on? So now we're like, how the hell are we going to get out of here? He's trying to call him at the restaurant. We can't get to our car, you know?
Yeah.
And now I'm starting to get freaking pissed and hot. I said, fuck, give me. I said, grab the climbing stick. Give me the goddamn keys. I'm getting this freaking, and then I don't want to kill this dog and shit. So then he handed me a big deadfall. I'm getting to this car, right? So I'm going to go in there. I go in, and this dog comes at me, and I freaking take a swing at it, and the stick breaks in half. And it flies off, and the dog turns into a puppy. And he runs and he fetches the stick and he's like, now he's all happy. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, we're sitting here for hours worried about getting in there. So we get in there. Bit. That's one story. And it kept going on and on.
So a lot of memorable events.
So did you kill anything in Connecticut?
No.
Did anybody?
No. It was a horrible year. One guy that was successful over there.
Connecticut just got shit on for like 6 minutes.
There's some nice bucks there, but the pieces that you got to get on are, yeah. you know how it is anywhere. You got to get the right parts.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we did have fun on a whitetail hunting trip, I'd have to say it was.
It's cool to see, like, your mindset a little bit is.
These guys are nuts.
You're a workhorse after it, you know, which is cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying you never relax and have a good time in, like, hunting camp.
I do now in my older years, but I didn't in the past.
Yeah, I can see that. Cody is not very much fun to hang out with, so I can see, like, just kind of through Cody. I'm just kidding.
When I first did this, man, a family suffered. I had a bunch of buddies that got divorces over it. We were just so into whitetail hunting.
So hardcore there about was, it. That
We'll tell the story about the dinner, too, with the burnt steaks with Mom one of these times, too. It was nice, funny.
But maybe another time.
Another time.
I think we closed this out here. I think we covered a lot of the early days, which is interesting. The story from... You know, the lone wolf in the business is out there, and we'll cover that more in detail, you know, maybe another series. There's a ton of topics we're going to go down, and let us know, guys, like, viewers and listeners, write us in. Like, if there's a full, like, episode you want us to cover, I mean, whatever it is, whatever topic, let us know.
Yeah, shoot it out.
If you're viewing this video on YouTube, subscribe, like, leave a comment, leave a suggestion for a topic, whatever, tell Cody he needs to change his look again because the dude looks different. You're going to look different every time we do a podcast.
Probably.
That's what we should
Most
do.
Most likely.
Anything else you guys want to add before we shut her down?
No. I think that pretty much sums it up. Tune in next time.
I came out of retirement to do this, though, was to give a little bit back to the guy. I've been hammered by guys always at show wanting to tell me. They tell me their scenario, and they want the answer to it, like, right there without seeing a property or just the scenario.
Yeah.
So if there's some things that I could give back to these guys that are going to help them.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, get from point A to point B. I'm happy
awesome.
To do it. So.
That's awesome. This is fun.
Yeah.
Number good two time. In the books. Hey, we need like a, you know, how I always say, go shoot your bow on working class.
I was just about to say, don't shoot your bow. No, yeah.
All right. Just something off the top. Close her out with something.
Man.
I'm pretending you're Steve. And just
hunt like a wolf.
Oh, there you go. Just took mine, man.
Boom.
Well, it's always been hunt like a wolf.
Shut her down.
All right. Peace out.